Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, March 8th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, gold had some pressure on it today. We had a high of 1276, opened up strong, and just kind of whittled and lost its gain throughout the day, down 550. At 1,262. Silver's down 0.27 at 1,546. And platinum and palladium pretty much took back their gains from yesterday. Platinum is down 17 at 987, and palladium is down 19 at 563. And the USDX today, up 0.07 at 97.18. Crude oil, 1.65 to the negative at 36.25. Once again, gold down 550 at 1262. Silver down 27 at 1546. And the paper markets today. Let me bring up the paper markets. They were down triple digits most of the day. The Dow was down 110 at 16,963. The NASDAQ down 59 at 46,48. The S&P down 22, 1979. 10-year yield dropped big, 0.07 at 1.83. It's been hovering around the 190. So the 10-year yield, 1.83. The Euro, 110. And European and Asian markets pretty much unchanged from yesterday. All down, but all down less than 1%. So back to the volatile markets, and the Dow is moving up. I don't think it's going to maintain its gains that it received, and I think this little dip in gold and silver is temporary, and I think we're going to see a continued growth for gold and silver.
Gold's up a little over $200
$200,
first
yeah.
of the year. You know, that's a remarkable, compared to what's happened. That's really a wonderful, a blessing. $200 an ounce.
Okay.
If you had 100 ounces, you're up $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad. I understand that's not a bad situation, and it's not impossible that even if the rate of increase falls in half for the balance of the year compared to what it's been for the first two months, it'd be instead of $100 a month, more or less, it'd be $50 a month. 10 months, $500 more on top of the current price, bring us up in range of $1,700 by the end of the year. No guarantee that's going to happen, but it's not impossible. Half the increase that we've seen in the first, if it continues to increase for the next 10 months, at half the rate it did for the first 2 months, we could see $1,700 gold before the end of the year.
Well, you know, this is an election year, and usually election years are fairly quiet years, but this is anything like a typical election year. So, you know, with that, yes, I do see. And the thing of it is, we see gold and silver rising, and people say, oh, it's getting too expensive. No, it's not getting too expensive. And we have to realize what the problems are. And the problems are there. The problems have not gone away. The only reason the stock market is up is because they're doing what they normally do. They're going out, they're loaning money, getting deeper in debt, and they're putting it into the stock market. I was reading an article today about these junk bonds. They have increased most in the I can't remember how many billions. I wanted to have that article in front of me, and maybe I can find it after the break. But, I mean, they were the big problems at the end of last year. Now, all of a sudden, this whole thing turned around, and there's more money flowing into these junk bonds, these corporate junk bonds, and the most ever. So, again, you see how the markets are trending along with these huge funds going into these junk bonds. And it's all based on debt. It doesn't have anything to do with any economy, any strength, any. It has everything to do with complete debt, make believe, basic money, and it's really mind boggling when you look at the numbers and the trillions of dollars, the billions and trillions of dollars. It's staggering, and it's just a matter of time until it all comes undone.
Well, we've had a couple of reports that we'll get to during the course of the program that deal with that. The IMF, for example, they're arguing, admitting that the economy is in the global economy is in terrible condition. In fact, we can do it right now. This is from AFP, which is a French newspaper. It says IMF ups call for action against global economic slide. The International Monetary Fund strengthened its call for concerted action to forestall a global economic slide on Tuesday, warning of the increasing risk of policy inertia. Policy inertia means doing nothing. I mean, that's what we get out of policy inertia, is doing nothing. But when they talk about a global economic slide, this always just amuses me, because to my mind, nobody's worried about taking a little slide in the economy. The economy slides up, it slides down, it's not a big deal. What we're talking about, the International Monetary Fund is not concerned about a global economic slide. They are concerned about a global economic depression. And they use this term slide to kind of put a happy face on it all, but that's what's got them going. IMF Deputy Managing Director David Lipton said that there is an increasingly dangerous view that policymakers worldwide have exhausted their options for boosting growth or have simply lost their will. And he's right. All right? For people who look at this, I mean, 90% of the people in this country don't know what I'm talking about, don't have a clue. But for people who do pay attention, they understand that the evidence is pretty clear that the central banks have run out of tools to manipulate the economy. Their attempt to install negative interest rates is a desperate attempt to compensate for the fact that quantitative easing, which is essentially free money or nearly free money, given that way, that doesn't work. Zero interest rates and perhaps negative interest rates in the foreseeable future, that hasn't worked. Let people borrow at next to nothing. And the central planners at the central banks have been unable to use the standard tools to manipulate the herd into doing what the central planners want the herd to do. the public's not buying it. They're ultimately refusing to go deeper into debt because that's what the central planners are trying to do. They're saying, look, we'll lend you the money. You know, we'll even give you negative interest rate. We will pay you to borrow money. That's what negative interest rates ultimately amount to. Right? We've had zero interest rate for the last 6-8 years, and we still haven't been able to manipulate the public, inspire them, entice them, seduce them, and say, okay, I'll borrow more money. Just where do I sign? Give me the cash, and I'll go out and spend it. They're not spending it. I mean, some people are borrowing, but not enough to stimulate the debt-based monetary system. It's not happening. So to counter all these problems, again, managing director, IMF managing director David Lippman, he said leaders must expand efforts, including fiscal and monetary stimulus, and urgently needed structural reforms to support growth. I'm not even sure what he means by urgently needed structural reports, but he talks, this entire article is about increasing fiscal stimulus. All right, the balance of this article is fiscal policy, government spending and tax breaks has to take a more prominent place in the policy mix. He's saying, look, he is implicitly admitting the central banks can't do this. The governments have to do something to bail us out of the global economic slide. All right? The central banks are helpless, and he's implicitly admitting that. He says the burden to lift the growth falls more squarely on advanced economies. That means the United States, for example. But he says the burden to lift growth falls more squarely on advanced economies, which have fiscal room to move. Meaning they're not already so deep in debt that they can't go any deeper. How are they going to stimulate the global economy without spending more money? And how are they going to spend more money unless they borrow it? At least that's certainly the case for the United States. The downside risks are pretty much more pronounced than before. The IMF's most recent projections for growth may no longer be applicable. In other words, he's admitting their most recent projections. They said, well, we think the global economy is going to increase by, who knows, 2% for the next year. But now he says those most recent projections may no longer be applicable amid a pullout of capital from emerging nations and a sharp contraction in global trade. He's saying, look, we're in a depression right now. He hasn't said it expressly, but he does say it by implication. A sharp contraction in global trade. We've talked about the Baltic Dry Index, which has fallen from, I don't remember, I think something like 12,000, if I recall correctly, at its peak, and it's now down in the neighborhood of 500. It's fallen by something like 97%. That's evidence, proof that the global economy is in a state of depression. This is not an economic slide. All right? This whole thing is going down the pipes, and it's happening right now. He says, moreover, risks have increased further with volatile financial markets and low commodity prices, creating fresh concerns about the health of the global economy. Lipton said, for the sake of the global economy, it is imperative that advanced and developing countries dispel this dangerous notion by reviving the bold spirit of action and cooperation that characterized the early years of the recovery effort. Well, great. You know, this is just the kind of rhetoric you expect from a high school coach in a bad teenage movie. All right? We've got to get out there and give a bold spirit of action and cooperation. And for the sake of the global economy, let's win one for the Gipper. All right? And we're going to do this. They're going to dispel the dangerous notion that the central banks have lost control. That's the dangerous notion he's talking about. By reviving the bold spirit of action and cooperation that characterized the early years of the recovery effort. Well, the recovery effort is interesting. That all by itself is an interesting concept to me because I know there are people who disagree with me, but from my perspective, there hasn't been a recovery. You know, if there was a recovery, we wouldn't be at this point, at the point where we are right now in the first place. Possibly most disconcerting, he added, is that the rise of and global risk aversion is leading to a sharp retrenchment of global capital and trade flows. What does he mean by a rise in global risk aversion? It means Some people aren't willing to lend. That's what I read. That's the way I read it. They are at least looking at things as so risky, some are unwilling to lend, and others are unwilling to borrow. I think this whole thing's going down. We're going to go into deflation. If you borrow money right now, when you go to pay it off, you'll have to pay it off in more expensive dollars, and the increase in the value of the dollars that you're repaying your original debt with, it may be sufficient to put you into bankruptcy. It's certainly going to slow you down. So some people are looking at the probability of deflation on the global stage, and they're saying, not me. I'm not getting into it. Lipton warned countries against trade protectionism and weak currency tactics to boost their growth, calling those zero-sum economic policies. Well, we've had weak currency going on here for a couple of years. While every currency in the world is trying to make itself worth less, and the only one that's been making itself worth more is the U.S. dollar, and not by choice. When we get hooked up in the dollar index where there's half a dozen currencies on one end of the teeter-totter and the dollar on the other end of the teeter-totter, when those six currencies go into inflation, the dollar must go into deflation. Huh? They've been pushing us. I don't know whether our country, our government, wanted to go into deflation or not, but they certainly have over the course of the last couple of years. We've slipped slowly closer and closer to deflation, at least on the international level. Last month, the IMF warned that the world economy is highly vulnerable and called for action from the group of 20 leading economies. But G20 finance chiefs meeting in Shanghai disagreed over concerted action, with Germany, for one, rejecting further fiscal and monetary efforts to spur economic activity. So what we've got here is a report from one of the chief officials in the International Deputy Managing Director, David Lipton. He has essentially said, oh my gosh, we're in big trouble, and we got to do something. Somebody do something. And what I'm saying is, oh my gosh, the situation must be truly desperate, because the IMF is telling the truth in public. When bankers are reduced to telling the truth in public, we must be already in or very near to a global depression. This is the sort of thing where you can hear in the text, if you listen closely, you can hear that this deputy managing director, he's not simply making a casual remark and say, well, we got a little trouble here, blah, blah, blah. This guy, the words as quoted in this article, I read them as evidence that the guy is on the verge of panic. Which, if he's deputy managing director for the International Monetary Fund, he probably has a pretty good idea of what's going on in the world. If he's afraid of what's happening, and this article implies that to me at least, if he's afraid, not just concerned, he's not just talking about an economic slide, but he's really talking about an economic depression, then you got to sit back and say, uh-oh. I don't know how much more time we have to get ready, but we better get ready. We're on the verge of serious trouble, certainly on the global level. We'll see what happens at the domestic level here in the United States. But there's trouble on the horizon and not the distant horizon, and good idea to get ready. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hey folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, on Friday, I don't know if the listeners have heard any of this, but the BlackRock, I'm sure they have by now, as we had a replay on the broadcast yesterday. BlackRock could be penalized for the gold ETF snafu that they had. They actually shut down trading on Friday, because they couldn't keep up with demand. They didn't register enough shares, and they didn't file for the appropriate paperwork with the SEC, and they had to shut down trading. They did open trading again yesterday with the proper number of shares that were needed. So, again, it's just another sign that there's people in there that are, they might be buying ETFs, but the interest for gold is extremely strong. And we have a little package going on today. We have my AU $5 Liberty gold piece. We have two specials, an AU $5 Liberty gold piece. We have 20 silver rounds. You'll get a free silver round. So you're actually getting 21 silver rounds for the price of 20. It includes your shipping cost for a total of $750. So that's an AU $5 Liberty gold piece, total of 21 silver rounds. You're only paying for 20, and includes your shipping cost for $750. If you'd like to upgrade the silver rounds to silver eagles, you can do that. You'll get 21 silver eagles for the price of 20, so you're basically getting a free silver eagle for $795. And of course, that also does include your shipping cost, and it does include your AU $5 Liberty gold piece. $750 for silver rounds and an AU $5 Liberty gold piece, and $50. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. It's 800-375-4188. Make sure you get to the website at dgscoins.com for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs live or archived. Thank you, Al.
Or you can listen to them if you've got an aluminum foil hat. You can listen to them psychically. But here's one question I have for you.
What's that, Al?
Is a $5 gold piece a quarter of an ounce of gold,
yes,
or thereabouts?
It's just shy of a quarter ounce.
Uh-huh. Okay. Didn't want anyone to think you're talking about the $5, the tenth of an ounce. Aren't they?
You know, you got a point, but the $5 AU Liberty gold piece is different than a $5 American Gold Eagle. And I know a lot of people do get confused. You have a lot of dealers out there who don't use the proper name for the proper coin. And whether it's by design, I'm just going to say they're just used to calling coins Liberty. I don't know why they do, but an AU $5 Liberty gold piece is a pre-1933 gold piece. The modern issue $5 gold piece is an American Gold Eagle.
Okay, here's another article that reflects on what's happening in the global economy. This is from Business Insider, and the headline is, China's exports are plunging. The world isn't buying what China is selling anymore, and it's a big problem for the economy. Export growth in the U.S. dollar terms plunged to -25% in February, year-on-year, from -11% in January. In other words, compared to export growth now, it's down. These are the kinds of statements that are confusing and hard to understand. Exports or export growth? It says export growth is down 25%. I'd rather they told us what the exports were rather than the export growth. But in any case, the point is China's exports are falling. They're declining. The figures were much weaker than analysts expected. While some analysts noted the numbers could be partly explained by the Chinese New Year holiday.
Oh.
See, this is like in this country, when things don't go right in the market, it's because we have an unseasonably cold or sometimes an unseasonably warm winter.
Hey, Al. I was reading an article about GM and the autos that they sold in China for that month, and they blamed the Chinese New Year, too, as why sales were down. So they're grasping.
I understand. The dog ate my homework and the rest of this sort of thing. Come on. Come on.
So it's just not
most of us are listening are adults. Try to feed us something we might fall for rather than this nonsense. But in any case, the Chinese New Year. The solution, therefore, is eliminate the Chinese New Year. Very simple. Probably we should eliminate the New Year in this country, too. And then if we didn't have New Year's Eve, then everything would be great.
We wouldn't have birthdays.
Huh? Well, the other thing, on the other side, if we didn't have New Year's Eve, we wouldn't have people going out and spending a bunch of money, get drunk and whatever, eat a big dinner and so on, go dancing. And that might be the next year that would be the cause for the economic decline. It's because we don't have a new year. If we do have a new year, it's bad for the economy. If we don't have a new year, that's bad, too. The article continues saying the government would have to boost its stimulus spending to get the economy going again. That means, of course, the Chinese government is going to have to spend more money, and it will certainly be every bit as successful at stimulating its economy by spending more money as the European Union has been, the United States has been, Japan has been. It's been a strategy that just doesn't seem to fail ever, right, Melody?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, huh? Except actually it does fail just about every time they apply it, and it'll fail for China too. Overall, today's trade data together with high-frequency data and leading indicators suggest that growth momentum weakened further during January and February. They suggested this, Melody.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. We get these suggestions. We don't want to leap to any conclusions now. Just because the exports have fallen significantly, it only provides basis for a suggestion, not a determination. Although fiscal policy has turned more proactive with the budget deficit raised to 3% of GDP this year, Business Insider says it believes it will not be enough to offset the slowdown of investment in real estate and associated manufacturing sectors in China. China's export decline is evidence of a global trade recession and or depression. All right? We're not just talking about Chinese New Year. They shot off too many firecrackers, or maybe they didn't fire enough. I don't know. But they didn't do Chinese New Year exactly right, and therefore there's a decline. No, there's a decline that is consistent with Baltic Dry Index falling from 12,000 to down in the neighborhood of 250-500, somewhere in that range. It is an incredible decline. It's like a 97% decline in the amount of cargo that's been hauled by ship in global trade over the course of the last several years, 97%. You can't look at that and say, oh, this is a slide in the economy, or the Japanese or the Chinese New Year didn't work out right. This is evidence. Look at it, folks. Look at it. All right? You're going to see it with your own eyes, hear it with your own ears, and if you bother to do that, and if you have the courage to actually perceive this stuff, not wait for somebody else to tell you. But perceive it. Just look at it. Look. Oh, my gosh. Guess what? It means we're in a depression. Insofar as any country's economy is based on exports, that segment of the nation's economy should be in a state of declining sales or at least declining profits. That includes not just China, but the United States, for example. Now, our exports are nowhere near as high a percentage of our economy as they have been for China. But nevertheless, we export some things, and it's going to be increasingly stressed. Those profits are going to go down, prices are going to go down, sales are going to go down. But what implication? Can we have a new world order without strong measures of global free trade? Can there be a new world order if the Baltic Dry Index has gone from 12,000 down to 500 or less?
Yes.
Can there be one? I don't think there can. If we don't get global free trade, I don't think there's going to be a new world order, at least not until that trade is restored.
It depends on what they're going to restore it to. It's not going to be restored, so it's all going to be based on a much lower, and these are the levels that the people are going to have to get used to. It's particularly in countries like Europe, like the U.S., a much lower standard of living.
I get that, but there are commitments made based on projections where they assumed that we were going to have X number of tons of cargo shipped, and it turns out nothing like that is happening, and it puts some businesses in a situation similar to that of junk bonds for oil.
What better way to bring in the new world order when the new world is under distress?
And they can
eliminate, and governments can come in and take over businesses and corporations. Maybe not tomorrow.
Well, not tomorrow.
But I certainly see it in the future.
But here's the way I look at it. As global trade declines, competition for that trade will increase. And that means the prices for the objects, whatever they've been exporting, are going to fall. And the profits are going to fall. And people are going to be under such competitive stress that they'll decide they will decide, I'm going to increase tariffs so we don't have to compete with these foreigners selling their products in our country. We'll see higher tariff barriers. We'll see restored nationalism, all of which, to my mind, is bad for a new world order. All right. New world order is fine when everybody's getting rich. But when everybody's getting poor and the pie is getting smaller, all of a sudden people say, close the borders. I don't want any more imports in here. They are affecting my ability to sell hotcakes. I'm selling hotcakes and I'm tired of competing with hotcakes that are made in Italy. coming to this country. So build the tariff barriers. More nationalism. As we have more nationalism, we will also see an increased tendency to war. When we compete over the prices of hotcakes and who can supply hotcakes and cars and jewelry and whatever it is you import and export, as that competition increases, we're going to have people becoming more desperate and more willing to go to war over the price of hotcakes. All of which, to my mind, is bad news for the New World Order. It's a setback to me. And I don't see that the New World Order can celebrate this. They've got to get this thing going if they want to establish a one world government. And
yeah, but you know what? You talk about the competition and the nationalism, and the way they create that, though, is through their currency devaluations. That's what makes their products more competitive. But the thing of it is, you know, if you're talking about tariffs and so on, I think what will happen is the New World Order isn't going to be, I think it's going to be set up in zones. I think there's going to be a competition through the currencies, because that's what stabilizes everything. But I mean, if you're talking about tariffs, then to where it would create wars and fighting.
It will create an increased predisposition to war. All right. And there's a little evidence.
We already have enough.
We went into the Great Depression we went into the Great Depression in 1929, and we came out after we went to war.
Yeah.
Right? We wound up that ultimately it at least laid part of the foundation for the Second World War.
Well, there's arguments out there where the war wasn't created, you know, and the war wasn't defined by our depression.
I agree.
So.
And the next war may not be defined by the next depression, but I'm just saying that the odds of going to World War III,
and I think we're too
significant, or a series of significant lesser wars in the world, are increased. I'm not saying we're absolutely going to war, but I'm saying the odds are increased by increased competition, which comes from diminished sales.
I think and also the what I believe is, I don't know if that's possible when they're going to, let me see, since all countries are fiat-based, I mean, that plays a larger part in any economy than,
yeah, but if it doesn't
than
work,
tariffs. And, you know, can you have tariffs when you have such a large amount of debt on the books in these countries?
Can you have candidates like Donald Trump running for public office? You know, we are living in unstable times, and as unemployment rises and jobs are lost and whatever, and income has not grown significantly in 30 years, a lot of strange things can happen. One of them is Donald Trump. Another one is tariffs.
And
not impossible. There will be people, whether it's right or wrong, good or bad, there are going to be people who say, yes, if it will protect my job, tariffs. I want tariffs.
I'm not arguing against tariffs. I'm just saying, can tariffs work in a country where there is so much debt in a fiat world and in today's world? I'm not against tariffs. I agree. So I'm just asking a question.
Well, whether tariffs can or cannot actually work has nothing to do with whether they will or will not be applied. All right? As people grow desperate, they will grasp at straws. Tariffs may be a straw. Maybe they don't do us any more good than negative interest rates. But insofar as the people in positions of power are growing increasingly desperate, they're willing, all right, let's set the rest of this done. We don't have anything else. What do you say? Let's try negative interest rates. Maybe that'll work. Or who knows? Maybe we need, somebody else is going to say, maybe we need tariffs. What about that? We could try it. Couldn't be any worse than it already is. In a state of desperation, people do peculiar and bizarre things. And I'm just saying this increased competition, lower prices, lower profits, lower wages, lower standard of living, all of that puts people into desperation, and they may do some very unusual things that could have significant adverse consequences. Let's take a break for some commercials, Melody, and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. During the break, Melody and I were talking a little bit about whether any of these proposed strategies for stimulating the U.S. and or global economies are likely to work. And one of the things I was mentioning to Melody is a fundamental rationale, a justification, not necessarily the true primary objective behind economic, the manipulation of our economies. But one of the fundamental justifications is that we want to get away from the business cycle, which is a sine wave where we go up, up, up into an economic boom and we have irrational exuberance and everybody thinks they're getting rich and they think it's going to last forever. And then we go down, down, down into a depression and everybody says, oh my gosh, we're never going to get better. Then we go back up, up, up to the next economic boom, more irrational exuberance and down, 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 so on. The idea behind Keynesian economics and the central planners' determination to manipulate the economy is to eliminate those downturns when we have depressions. That's a fundamental idea. They don't want to go through another Great Depression. And they are at least justifying their strategies by saying, we are protecting you, the little people, from the next Great Depression. But what I wonder about is this. If we're going to go into, is a Great Depression truly a bad thing? And the answer is yes, it can be a terrible thing for some people. But even during the Great Depression, 70% of the people had jobs in this country. They got along. It was tight. It was difficult. But nevertheless, we got by. All right? For 20-30%, it was a very bad time. But I wonder, is an economic depression in the business cycle much like, is it really a bad thing or is it a good thing in the sense that vomiting after you've had too much to drink is a good thing? Let's get the toxins out of the system, sit there, hang your head in the toilet bowl and puke your guts out. Maybe it's part of the, it's a necessary part of the healing. Maybe it's impossible to just run up, 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 and up. Maybe we need to have those depressions periodically. I'm not arguing that's true, but I am arguing that it's possibly true. What do we got here for our couple of callers, one or more callers? Jim from West Virginia. Jim, what you got?
Oh, well, I've got 2 points. One I'm going to touch on, let you think about it, but I don't want to expand on it. The other one I'm going to, these are in plain sight for anybody with open eyes. 1823, Monroe Doctrine. Oh, we're going to put our troops all over the Western Hemisphere to keep those bad old Europeans from hurting us. No, that was to install our military to protect the counterfeiters who run these governments. Mm-hmm. We have our military in 100-and-some different countries for that reason. We are the hidden enforcers for the counterfeiters, all pretty much associated with the Rothschilds. That's number one point. There would be more Icelands if it weren't for our stinking military and the jerks who run them. I'm not blaming the military, but that's what is plain, pure, simple, raw facts of the matter. That's why we're there. Okay. I'm just going to leave that one be. And we would have more Icelands if it weren't for that. Now, point number two. This is in Blaine Valley. I'm going to talk about the coal industry. I'm going to say 30 years ago because I think I can get away with this one without getting sued or shot. Okay, I was in a rather high-level meeting with some coal company executives in Virginia, and these guys flew in a helicopter. That tells you something. And there were some problems with control systems, very nasty ones, actually. I was right in the middle of it fixing them. But anyway, at the end of the meeting, one of the executives was out there, and the helicopter pilot. So I'm sitting there, you know, me, Mr. Motormouth. I said, hey, tell me something. Why is it that you guys have developed these properties down here in Virginia where you have to go deeper for the coal, super high-grade met coal, and you've had to even put in your own rail lines and a lot of infrastructure to get this? Why aren't you in West Virginia? The guy looked at me, just flat, simple, just like I asked to pass the salt or pepper. He said, well, there's no place on our spreadsheet for brown bag money. Okay, payoffs. I was shocked. I didn't know it was that bad. He said, what we have to do in West Virginia is we pretty much lease the coal out to these operators who can control the regulators. He said, in West Virginia, you can have a corrupt coal mine operator who's operating unsafely. He pays off the regulators. And then what happens is the regulators, MSHA, Mining Safety Health Administration, goes around to the guys who are trying to do everything right, and they find a pee out of them over nothing. He said, so the only way we can do anything in West Virginia is to do contract mining. Let the mom-and-pop operators who have the brown bag money keep it going. And I am not kidding you. Somebody sent me a photograph of a coal miners with regular tennis shoes in a coal preparation plant. You're supposed to have steel toes and metatarsals, steel on top of your foot, too. Wanted me to connect it with one of my newspaper guys to get this point across. And no way the newspaper would even touch it. But it is plain, pure, raw corruption. Now, every single government regulatory agency is yet another avenue for corruption. I could talk for hours about mom-and-pop restaurants being put out because of daily health inspectors, but the people at the chain restaurant across the street knew exactly when the health inspector was going to come, because the boss would say, clean up super special tonight. It's plain, pure, raw corruption. I'm part of West Virginia. I had some name recognition in West Virginia complaining about this a number of years back. But the bottom line is plain, pure, raw, simple corruption. These regulatory agencies, which are, they almost all of them do the exact opposite of what they're supposed to. Look
at
the FDA. Huh?
What's the lesson in this?
The lesson is very simply, we can't blame the Chinese or anybody else. Tariffs, financial people tend to be rather myopic. Overall economics, the lesson is this. You have to look at the overall economy. You have to look at it and say very simply, we have these regulatory agencies which do exact opposite of what they're supposed to do. We have to get rid of them. They're the big disease. They are the elephant in the room. Huh?
You're probably right, James.
I know I am. I watched it. I'll let it go at that.
All right, Jim, thank you. Appreciate your call.
Yeah,
I think the other lesson.
Catch you later. God bless.
God bless. I think the other lesson here is something that's inherent in our Constitution. It is an inherently anti-government document. The reason we have checks and balances, three branches of government, the first, the Bill of Rights, right? The limits on government power that were declared in the Declaration of, or in the Constitution of the United States. All of this was entitled to protect us from government. And all of that is based on the founders' fundamental understanding that the principal enemy of the people of the United States of America was then and would always be our own government. And that's true in this country. Principal enemy of the people of England is the government of England. Principal enemy of the people of Japan is the government of Japan. Principal enemy of the people is Russia. Government of Russia. The relationship between any people and their government is always adversarial. All right? The government says, oh, no, we're here to help. We're not your adversaries. We're here to help you. And the public is usually dumb enough to accept that, but the truth of the matter is this is an adversarial relationship, and the government knows it. The average American does not. They think the government is here to help them. They'd be dumb. Let's take our other caller if he's still here. Jim, are you, or Joe, are you still here?
I'm still here, yeah.
What up, Joe?
Hello. Yeah, what I wanted to say was you were talking about whether tariffs would do the economy good or not. And I don't think there's any doubt that they do our economy a tremendous amount of good, you know, because basically what they would do, what they always do is they would make it cheaper to buy domestically made stuff instead of imported stuff. And so we would start producing a lot more in this country. We'd have a lot more jobs in this country. We wouldn't have this huge trade deficit, which is sending so much money out of the country. You know, much more money would circulate in the country. We'd have much more production in this country. We'd make much more profit in this country. And so if we're going to have any chance of actually paying down that huge monstrous debt, which might be too
never
big to
happen.
Pay, but if we have any chance at all of ever paying it, you know, what we've got to do is get back to producing in this country, not sending so much money out of the country, and making more profit in this country so that we have the money to pay the debt with. And I think the whole reason we have a depression is because ever since NAFTA and GATT was passed, basically what we've been doing is borrowing money to buy stuff made in other countries. And, you know, you just can't keep on doing that. Eventually, you know, the debt runs up so high, you just can't borrow anymore. You can't keep up the payments on the debt. And I think we've reached that point, and that's why we're depressed. So I don't see that. I think the free traders, you know, they base everything they say on a kind of a mixture of lies and unrealistic ideology, you know, and when you really look at the history of it, if you really study the history of it, you'll find that tariffs always help an economy. And in fact, no country has ever become a great, you know, industrial or manufacturing economy unless it has had some form of protectionism to keep its market from being dominated by foreign stuff.
Can you cite an example?
Yeah, well, this country, yeah, and the...
I'll give you one more recent than that. Japan.
Uh-huh.
After
uh-huh.
World War II, Japan was decimated. But
uh-huh.
they grew to be the second biggest economy in the world based on high tariffs. It was almost
uh-huh.
impossible for American manufacturers to sell goods and products, services into Japan. They put up their high tariffs. They wouldn't let anybody sell. They had a captive market in their own country, and with that captive market, they actually developed their technology, built their factories, one thing and another. They became the second biggest economy in the world. Tariffs. And that's recent. That's in my lifetime. Your lifetime,
mm-hmm.
maybe. I don't know if it's your lifetime or not, Joe, but it's in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no doubt about it.
About
that's a fact.
My lifetime, too. Yeah, I remember all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I don't think there's any doubt about it, that tariffs and protectionism, they always help the country. They always help the people of the country, but they
yeah.
don't help international businesses. They want to do business, you know, they want to make things in one country cheap and buy raw materials in another country cheap and then sell it in another country where they can get the highest price for it. You
That's
know,
exactly
business,
right.
The business is big enough to do business internationally that way. They don't like tariffs, but it's always good for the people of the country and it's always good for the economy of the country.
Right. Which is more evidence that our government has been bought and paid for by an oligarchy of rich individuals and or rich corporations, and they are bribing your congressman, your senator, your president to pass laws that are good for multinational corporations but are devastating for the people of this country. We're losing our jobs. We're losing our wages. We haven't seen any growth in wages to speak of. Real wages haven't grown since the 1970s. Got 30 years of stagnation at best.
And that's because we got to compete with the wages in India and China and Mexico.
you know, the problem with that multinational corporation is the American labor is forced to compete head-on with the Japanese labor, the Chinese labor, the Mexican labor, all right? And as a result, the American labor's wage standard must go down, right? You can't compete with the Mexicans, the Chinese. I won't say the Japanese at one point. That's no longer true. They're paid as much or more than we are. But you can't compete with cheap third world labor without your wages going down. Tariffs protected American workers from a decline in wages where they had to compete head on with third world, the people who are impoverished in the third world. It is a tragedy for the people of the third world that they're going to have to go hungry, starve, and perhaps die. But I don't recognize that as sufficient reason to say, well, let's knock down the American tariff barriers and we'll just put the American people into poverty. So we can all sing Kumbaya and the world can be a wonderful place. Let these foreign countries figure out how to run their own economies in a way that's actually good for the ordinary people. And the solution to their problems can't be to impose those same problems on the people of the United States of America. What else, Joe? Anything else? We've got about 90 seconds.
Oh, well, I had a question for Melody, and that was I went in a store today where I placed the deals with art and coin and currency. And I overheard the guy talking to somebody on the phone, and what they were talking about is 2015 silver eagles, W silver eagles. They were talking about how apparently a lot of those are counterfeit. Mel, do you know anything about that?
There has been some reports that there were some coins that were sold someplace, and there was even some bars. But, you know, that's been floating around for a long time. And, yeah, you know, again, it all comes back to where you buy. You know, if you're going to be buying on eBay, if you're going to be buying at people that you don't know, that you haven't done business with for, and you're trying to save 50 cents to a dollar, yeah, you might run into some problems. But, you know, in 20 plus years that I've been doing this, it's very rare that you ever come across counterfeit coins. It's difficult to counterfeit coins. And if somebody's going to dump counterfeit coins, they're going to walk into the corner store and hope they get someone that is inexperienced to sell that coin to, because they can grab the cash and leave. And you have to be careful. Your flea markets, things like that, you can pick up some good deals at these places. But if you're going to find counterfeit products, that's where you're going to find them. So, you know, you just have to be very smart. And
emptor, the buyer must beware, and that's what it comes down to. But what else it comes down to?
There aren't as many counterfeit coins out there as people believe.
Okay, folks, thanks for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord will bless you, me, Jim from West Virginia, and Joe from Arkansas. Thank you, folks. Bye-bye.
I work all day and pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? But still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.